Hadn't Mrs. Zimmerman said that she had seen old Isaac taking notes on the sky? There were dates here and entries after them. Lewis read a few entries and his eyes opened wider. He leafed some more. A spatter of rain hit the window. Lewis jumped. Outside he could see thick masses of blue clouds piled up in the west. Through them ran a jagged red streak. It looked to Lewis like a hungry mouth. As he watched, the mouth opened and a ray of blood-red light shot into the room. It lit up the page he was holding. On the page were scrawled these words, "Doomsday not come yet. I'll draw it nearer by a perspective, or make a clock that shall set all the world on fire upon an instant." Lewis felt very frightened. He gathered the papers together and started to get up. As he did so, he heard a noise, a very faint noise. Something was fluttering around down inside the organ case. Lewis stumbled backward, knocking over the bench. The paper slid out of his hand and scattered over the floor. What should he do? Run for his life or save the papers? He gritted his teeth and knelt down. As he gathered up the sheets, he said to himself over and over again, "Quia tu es Deus fortitudo mea? Quia tu es Deus fortitudo mea?" Now he had all the papers again. He was about to dash for the door when he saw something come floating up out of the darkness inside the organ. A moth. A moth with silver gray wings. They shone like leaves in the moonlight. Lewis ran to the door. He rattled the knob, but he couldn't get it open. Now he could feel the moth in his hair. Lewis went rigid. His face flushed. He was not scared anymore. He was angry. Very angry. He swatted at the moth and crushed it. Lewis felt a horrible, runny stickiness in his hair, and the fear came rushing back. He wiped his hand frantically on his trouser leg. Now Lewis was out in the hall, running and shouting, "Uncle Jonathan, Mrs. Zimmerman, come quick! Oh, please, come quick! I've found something, Uncle Jonathan!" A little while later, Jonathan, Lewis, and Mrs. Zimmerman were sitting around Mrs. Zimmerman's kitchen table drinking cocoa. The dusty papers lay in a heap on the table. Jonathan put down his mug and said, "No, Lewis, I tell you again, there's nothing to worry about. Old Isaac was crazy. Crazy as a coot. This stuff has nothing to do with the ticking noise in the walls, or if it does, it can't help us any. It can only frighten us." "I'd say that was why Isaac left those papers there, wouldn't you, Jonathan? To frighten us to death, I mean?" This was Mrs. Zimmerman speaking. She was standing at the stove with her back to Lewis, and she was making a great show of stirring the cocoa. "Sure, I'd say it was, Florence," said Jonathan, nodding. "One last trick for the road, and that sort of thing." Lewis looked from one to the other. He knew they were covering up, but what could he say? One thing would lead to another, and before long he would have to tell about Halloween night. When you are hiding something, you get the feeling that every other secret is connected to your secret. Lewis couldn't challenge anyone for fear of being exposed himself. Late that same night, Lewis lay awake in bed, listening to Jonathan and Mrs. Zimmerman talking. They were in the study below, and as usual, their voices drifted up the hot air register. And as usual, he couldn't quite make out what they were saying. He got out of bed and crawled over to the wooden grating in the floor. A warm breath of heat softly beat at his face. He listened. Even now, he couldn't hear well enough. There was only one thing to do. He had to use the secret passageway. Lewis put on his bathrobe and tipped down the back stairs. The kitchen was dark. Good. Slowly, carefully, he removed all the china from the shelves of the china cupboard. Then he tripped in the hidden spring, and the cupboard swung outward. He walked softly in. This time, Lewis remembered to bring a flashlight. Not that he needed it much. He didn't have far to go, and light shone through the many chinks in the cobweb passage. Before long, he was standing behind the bookcases that lined the wall of Jonathan's study. He peered through a crack in the boards, and there, beyond the books, were Jonathan and Mrs. Zimmerman. Mrs. Zimmerman had just conjured up a match out of thin air, and she was lighting a long, twisted cigar with it. She blew smoke out of both corners of her mouth. "Well, now we know," she said. "Yes, now we know." Jonathan's voice came from his leather armchair where he sat slumped. All that Lewis could see of him was one blue-sleeved arm and a set of hairy knuckles grasping a chair arm. "The question is," Jonathan went on, "can we do anything about it?" Mrs. Zimmerman began to pace. Cigar smoke trailed off behind her. She scraped the large purple stone of her ring along the whole length of the bookshelf. "Do," she said. "Do? We fight them. What else?" Jonathan gave a hoarse laugh. It made Lewis feel very uncomfortable. "Easier said than done, Florence. They're both stronger than we are, you know. We only fill with magic. They gave their lives to it. As for her, she may have quite literally given her life for it." "But why would they want to do what they're doing?" said Mrs. Zimmerman, folding her arms and puffing angrily at her cigar. "Why? This beautiful world! End it? Why?" Jonathan thought a minute. "Well, Florence, I can't really see into the workings of a mind like Isaac Izzard's, but I'd say the answer was was scientific curiosity. Think of all that's been written about the last day. Graves opening, bodies rising up fresh and new. Some think there will be a whole new earth, much better than the present one. Wouldn't you like to see it? And another thing occurs to me. Isaac and Selena Izzard didn't enjoy this world very much. Why shouldn't they try for the next one? Jonathan puffed on his hookah. There was silence for several minutes. And the clock, said Mrs. Zimmerman. I have to hand it to you. You were dead right. There is a real, literal clock in these walls. He calls it a device, but it has to be a clock. He wasn't kind enough to tell us where it is, of course, though it seems to me that he tells practically everything else. He even gives hints about where he hid the key. Not that that matters now. She broke her cigar in two and threw it into the fireplace. But there's one thing I'd like to know, she said, turning subtly to Jonathan. Why did he need a clock to bring the end of the world? Lewis was gasped and put his hand over his mouth. Then it was going to end the world after all. Because he lost the moment, Jonathan answered. The moment he had been seeking all those years. It was quite a search that old Isaac made. That's why he has all those crazy notes about mackerel skies and last judgment skies and clouds that look like chariots and trumpets and masks of doom. That was what he was after, a mask of doom, a sky that would be right for his incantations. Sky magic is old stuff, you know. The Romans used to... Yes, yes, cut in Mrs. Zimmerman impatiently. I know all about sky and bird divination. Who's got the D-Mag A around here, anyhow? All right. So the right sky comes along for old droopy drawers. Fine, dandy. So why doesn't he just wave his wand and turn us all into mullygrubs? Because by the time he had made sure it was the right kind of sky, the sky had changed. It doesn't take long for clouds to move and change patterns, you know. Or maybe he lacked the heart to do it. Sounds silly, but I keep hoping that's what held him off. Him? Lack the heart? Isaac Izzard? He was a hard man, Jonathan. He'd have pulled out his mother's teeth one by one if he had to have them for some devil magic. Jonathan sighed. Maybe you're right. I don't know. The important thing is that he did miss his opportunity. That's why he had to build the clock, to bring the time back, the exact time when everything was right and in place. That's what he means when he talks about a device to redeem the time. Redeem indeed. He wanted to destroy us all. Mrs. Zimmerman was pacing again. All right, she said. All right. So he built the clock. Why doesn't he just wind it up? He couldn't. Not all the way, at any rate. Didn't you read the passage? Jonathan got up and went to the library table where the papers were lying. He picked them up and leafed until he found the page he wanted. Ah, here it is. But when the device was completed, I found that I lacked the skill to wind it all the way up. I have tried, but I must conclude that one with greater power than I possess will be needed for the final adjustment. Curse the day she left me. Curse the day she went away. She might have done it. Jonathan looked up. In that last sentence, the word she is underlined four times. She, of course, is our friend across the street. Lewis closed his eyes. Mrs. O'Meara really was Mrs. Izzard, then. He had guessed it, of course, but he hadn't been sure. Mrs. Izzard, and he had let her out. He felt like the stupidest, most foolish person in the whole world. Ah, yes, said Mrs. Zimmerman, smiling wryly. Well, we shall see in the end who is stronger. But tell me one thing more, O sage, since it seems you have been cast in the role of explicator and annotator of the testament of Isaac Izzard. Yes, what would you like to know, Florence? Well, he claims that the clock isn't wound all the way up, but it has been making a ticking sound for years now, a magic ticking that seems to be coming from behind every wall in this house. It's hard for me to believe that the clock is just whiling the time away until old Auntie Izzard arrives with her key. What is the clock doing? Jonathan shrugged. Search me, Florence. Maybe it's trying to drag the house back into the past without the aid of that final adjustment. Maybe he fixed it so the ticking sound would scare away anyone who might be foolish enough to come and live in this house. Isaac didn't want his clock found by accident and destroyed, after all. I don't know why the clock is ticking, Florence, but I do know this. When Mrs. Izzard, or whoever is over there, puts the key in the slot of that clock and finishes the job that Isaac started, then, at that moment, Isaac Izzard will return. You, I, and Lewis will be ghosts or something worse, and he will be standing in the turret with power in his right hand, and the end of the world will come to pass. Lewis clamped both hands over his mouth. He fell to his knees, shuddering and sobbing. For a moment, he was on the verge of shouting, "Here I am! Come and get me!" so they could come and take him away and put him in a detention home for life. But he didn't shout. He clamped his hands more tightly over his mouth, and he cried in muffled bursts that shook his whole body. He cried for a long time, and when he was through, he sat staring listlessly at the dark wall of the passageway. Mrs. Zimmerman and Jonathan left the room. The fire burned low, but still Lewis sat there. His mouth was full of the taste of ammonia, and his eyes burned. He took his handkerchief out of the pocket of his bathrobe and blew his nose. Where was the flashlight? Here it was. He clicked it on. Lewis got up slowly and started to pick his way toward the entrance. Even though he was walking upright, he felt as if he were slinking. Now he was running his hand over the splintery back of the china cupboard. He tripped the spring, and the cupboard swung silently outward. Lewis half expected to see Mrs. Zimmerman and Jonathan sitting there with their arms folded waiting for him, but the kitchen was dark and empty. Lewis went up to his room. He felt as if he had stayed awake 3 nights in a row. Without even stopping to take off his bathrobe, he threw himself onto the rumpled bed. Darkness filled his brain, and he fell into a deep, dreamless sleep.